This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2021, held at Faith Builders from August 2 through 6.
Educating for the Kingdom, compassion. I'll start with a little disclaimer. I gave these talks before in 2017, and things sort of fell through with COVID and some Canadian travel this year, so I agreed to come back and give these talks. And you never know what a year will bring forth. We certainly learned that during COVID, didn't we? So as I went back over my notes and the presentations, this was the first slide that I showed in 2017. And so I thought, well, for sure I'll delete that. But then I thought, well, you know, I'll leave it in because it tells a little about my life. And I learned a lot of compassion in 2017. You see, Nicholas did break the tie for our family, but he was stillborn. And one of the hardest things I've had to do in my life so far was telling Shayna and Cedric that their little brother had died. So we had a little funeral for him, and a meaningful song to our family is "Hold Tight to the Sound of the Music of Living." And then in 2019, we were doubly blessed, which we're still trying to comprehend, and learning that all you have is this moment. So I don't have time to learn all of your stories here today, but as you have time with your students this year, I encourage you to share your story and open the door for them to share so you can share compassion. So, how many of you are first-year teachers? Excellent. Okay. And are you nervous? Some honest people here as well. Good. Okay. So let's read a story to start. Maybe this is your story. It's called First Day Jitters. Have any of you heard of it before? Couple. Okay. "Sarah, dear, time to get out of bed," Mr. Hartwell said, poking his head through the bedroom doorway. "You don't want to miss the first day at your new school, do you?" "I'm not going," said Sarah, and pulled the covers over her head. "Of course you're going, honey," said Mr. Hartwell, as he walked over to the window and snapped up the shade. "No, I'm not. I don't want to start over again. I hate my new school," Sarah said. She tunneled down to the end of her bed. "How can you hate your new school, sweetheart?" Mr. Hartwell chuckled. "You've never been there before." "Don't worry. You liked your other school. You'll like this one. Besides, just think of all the new friends you'll meet." "That's just it. I don't know anybody, and it will be hard, and I just hate it. That's all." "What will everyone think if you aren't there? We told them you're coming." "They will think that I am lucky, and they will wish that they were at home in bed, like me." Mr. Hartwell sighed. "Sarah Jane Hartwell, I'm not playing this silly game one second longer. I'll see you downstairs in 5 minutes." So Sarah tumbled out of bed, stumbled into the bathroom, fumbled into her clothes. "My head hurts," she moaned as she trudged into the kitchen. Mr. Hartwell handed Sarah a piece of toast and her lunchbox. They walked to the car. Sarah's hands were cold and clammy. Then they drove down the street. She couldn't breathe. And then they were there. "I feel sick," said Sarah weakly. "Nonsense," said Mr. Hartwell. "You'll love your new school once you get started. Oh, look, there's your principal, Mrs. Burton." Sarah slumped down in her seat. "Oh, Sarah," Mrs. Burton gushed, peeking into the car. "There you are. Come on. I'll show you where to go." She led Sarah into the building and walked quickly through the crowded hallways. "Don't worry. Everyone is nervous the first day," she said over her shoulder as Sarah rushed to keep up. When they got to the classroom, most of the children were already in their seats. The class looked up as Mrs. Burton cleared her throat.
Class, attention please, said Mrs. Burton. When the class was quiet, she led Sarah to the front of the room and said, Class, I would like you to meet your new teacher, Mrs. Sarah Jane Hartwell. Are you less nervous now? Everyone knows what to do during a story. Stories automatically draw everyone in because that's how we're wired. Life is a story. But sometimes we get so caught up in our own stories that we forget about the other stories in the room. The first step to compassion is to imagine ourselves in someone else's shoes. Good teachers get nervous too, but they remember that the students are nervous as well. And as long as we're all in this boat together, we might as well row. Before we get into our compassion theme, I'd like to define the terms we'll be using this week in our theme, Educating for the Kingdom. So first, we'll briefly look at defining education, and then what is the kingdom, and then come back to finish up with compassion. So first of all, as new teachers or beginning teachers for some of you, what is education? This, of course, could be a whole philosophy class, but we're just going to sum it up with a couple key things I think you should know. Proverbs 4:5, get wisdom, get understanding, forget it not. And Proverbs 4:7, wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get understanding. So we can see from these passages that wisdom plus understanding equals education. The world's education often doesn't teach wisdom along with understanding, or it might teach you to be wise as a serpent, but not harmless as a dove, in which case you're not truly wise, because the truly wise are like Jesus. So, true education includes wisdom along with understanding. Next, education is both informative and formative. And these are similar, but we often use them differently. So I will define informative as more of things of the mind, and formative as more things of the heart. And when we're teaching our students, we want to deal with both, not just giving them the facts, but also realize that we're forming their hearts. And we read in the Bible that we should teach the truth in love. In fact, when truth is not spoken in love, it can cease to become true. Consider an example of talking to your dog. I love you, wonderful dog. And then you give it a little kick. Or, I hate you, idiotic dog, while you pet it behind the ears. Which will the dog like? Which will the dog consider to be true? So it's one thing to say something, it's another thing to live it out. So true education includes both mind and heart things, but it's often common to overemphasize the mind in education and forget the heart is always being formed as well. So here are three additional examples of each for you. Informative things are things that are true, or how it works, or what it's made of. And these things are important to study, but dangerous. Consider the atomic bomb, which represents some of man's most skilled thinking, to go into the atom and get it to self-destruct. Is that truly useful or productive? Is it wise? Would Jesus build a bomb? Who would Jesus bomb? Formative. These are things that you feel, what you desire, what you love. So, if we teach our children to do math, but they use that skill to cheat on their taxes, have we succeeded? If we teach history, but our children repeat it, or at least the sad parts of it, have we succeeded? If our children hang out at the mall, or their main desire is to get rich, have we succeeded? And here's four more points on education, comparing what education is and what education is not. So education is not facts alone, but facts plus wisdom. A fact is just a fact until you fit it into a story. You can't know God through facts alone. The context gives meaning. Another point, education is not equal to schooling, but it is, we're looking for growth and connection. So I certainly hope your students are going to be educated in school, but Mark Twain always said he tried not to let his schooling get in the way of his education. So acknowledge that your students are growing in many ways, and school knowledge is one part of the puzzle that will give them context for the facts they're learning in everyday life. But we're seeking to give them context for living as much as just facts. Speaking of facts, education is not just a thing to download, but it is, in a Christian view, a process of becoming and becoming more like Christ. And the last point is similar. Education is not just a thing that you get, but it's a change of being. We hope that our students will be changed by being educated, not just achieving more facts. So comparing it to the Christian life, we're always trying to know Christ better, deeper, and fuller. And we don't stop. We aren't done being saved once we've prayed the sinner's prayer. Or now that we're saved, we're not done being a Christian, but rather we were embarking on a journey at that point, an adventure, a process of becoming more who we are meant to be in God's image. So education is a journey. So in review, three main points about education: wisdom plus understanding, both informative and formative, and it's a process, a change of being. So maybe you saw in these three points a theme of heart being at the center. And since our hearts are always changed some through education, even if we're being hardened, our highest school of education is to call and inspire and disciple students for the kingdom. So, what is the kingdom? Educating for the kingdom. Well, Jesus told many stories to illustrate the kingdom, and each one he told describes one small facet of the kingdom, as if a diamond has many faces. So I will use a story as well to talk about the kingdom. One icy January day in 1982, Air Florida Flight 90, a Boeing 737 that was bound for Florida, was scheduled for departure at 3:15, but because of a snowstorm, the takeoff was delayed. Unbeknownst to the pilots, ice built up on the wings during that time, and 20 seconds after takeoff, Air Florida Flight 90 plunged into the Potomac River, killing 74 of its passengers and four others who happened to be on the path. There were at least two heroes that day. The first hero, unidentified, was a middle-aged man who was last seen clinging to the tail section of the plane, which was the only part of the plane that remained above the water. When a lifeline was dropped to him from the helicopter, he directed it to someone else who needed it more desperately than he did. By the time the helicopter made a second trip, the man had disappeared. No one was able to identify who he was, but we can be sure God knows who he was. The second hero that day was a young man in his early 20s, maybe like some of you, Lenny Skutnik, who was on his way home from work, and he got as far as the 14th Street Bridge, and then there was a bottleneck, and he got out to see what was going on, and people were milling around the bank of the river. And he jumped out of his car and got a first-hand view of the terrible crash, his eyes fixed on 22-year-old flight attendant Priscilla Tirado, who was screaming for help. Overcome with emotion, he threw off his heavy coat and shoes and plunged into the frigid waters. When he reached the flight attendant, she was almost gone, but somehow he managed to bring her to shore. Everybody loves a hero, and so it was in the case of Lenny. He was flooded with telephone calls and interviews, and President Reagan invited him to sit with his family at the State of the Union address, starting the tradition ever since of presidents having someone there to show off. So what is the kingdom? First of all, we see the kingdom is not about me. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. It's about something greater than ourselves. In fact, it's not even about my classroom, my subjects, or even my students, and just polishing them for perfection. It's about the kingdom. It's about something greater than ourselves. When we teach for the kingdom, we're aiming for something more than just our students being successful in society. American, or dare I say, worldly education has nothing more to offer students than to help them develop themselves to their fullest potential. And then what happens to athletes once they've reached the top? When the famous can't become more famous, or when the rich become the richest, what's left? There's no way but down. So Jesus teaches the way down, the way up is down. So it's not that we don't want students to reach their full potential, but we want them to know how to use their potential wisely in fulfilling ways. Consider the analogy, it's like receiving a Christmas gift that you leave wrapped because it's too special to open. You just really value who gave it to you and it was just really special. You're never going to open it. You're just going to keep it on the shelf and show it to people when they come. Wouldn't that be a little strange to not open a gift? That's what salvation is. It's a gift to be used. That's what education is. It's not something to get and keep and polish. It's something that changes us and to make us useful for the world. And finally, the way the world is truly made to operate. Mark talked this morning about those that turned the world upside down. So the world looks upside down to most people, but to those who have Jesus' eyes, we realize the kingdom way is really the way, is really the true reality. Love of God and love of neighbor. And Jesus told many stories to illustrate this upside down kingdom and what it was like. And as Anabaptists, we have our own stories, none stronger than the likes of Dirk Willems and Nickel Mines and other non-resistance stories, we call them, that show how we should really act when we're educated in the kingdom. So at the end of time, who we have become will be most important. Consider Matthew 5, the judgment story. Sorry, Matthew 25 at the end, the judgment story. Those who thought they knew never saw the true needs. Those who met the needs weren't doing it for reward, but because that's who they had become. So we're looking to teach our students to become those kingdom workers. Educating is becoming, and kingdom is loving like Jesus. We're not just seeking to tell our students something, we're seeking for them to become like Jesus. So this is our overarching goal for our teaching and for our theme these 4 days. So how do we get there? First of all, the theme today is compassion. And I assume we all want to be compassionate and want compassionate students. So how do we get there? The rest of our time is going to be spent in the middle here. How do we teach with compassion? And each day as I talk this week, I plan to use 3 main questions for the format. First of all, how did Jesus teach with compassion, or the other topics we're looking at? How do others teach with compassion? And how can I teach with compassion? So first of all, how did Jesus teach with compassion? Well, this could be a whole sermon in itself, but so we're not going to be all inclusive here. I just picked out 3 things to talk about in Jesus' compassion. First of all, touch. In Mark 1, a leper came to him and knelt down and said, "If you will, you can make me clean." And moved with pity, he stretched out his hand and touched him and said, "I will be clean." people were fearful of the lepers in society, right? They were the contagious. Keep them away. But Jesus was not only willing to heal him, you know, he could have done it from a distance maybe, but he was willing to touch him. So he was willing to touch the lives of all men regardless of race or social or economic standing. And so I know today, in today's society, you need to be careful to avoid too much physical touch. But in touch here, I'm thinking of more than just physical touch. Little children need touch and words of affirmation. You can be close. You can look in their eyes. Let the children come to you. Listen to them. Look in their eyes and be near to them. Jesus used tears. And we learn about his compassion from Luke 19:41. When he drew near and saw the city, he wept over it and said, "Would that you, even you, had known on this day the things that make for peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes." So here he was weeping because his Jewish brethren refused his teaching. And of course, the famous verse, John 11:35, Jesus wept over the death of Lazarus. So why did he weep? Because he was about to raise Lazarus. So why would he need to cry? Was it just to show off to the people around him for their benefit? I think it was something deeper. I think he knew he was face to face with the last enemy, death. He knew what humans fear the most, and he knew what he would have to do eventually to conquer this enemy. So it's okay for our students to see us cry. In fact, it may be necessary sometime. Testament. Jesus taught a New Testament. Love God, love neighbor. In Matthew 22:40, on these two commands hang all the law and the prophets. So everything can be summed up in love of God, love of neighbor. Another verse from Mark 6:34, he went ashore, saw a great crowd, and had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things, like the Good Samaritan parable. This is how you should live. Everyone is your neighbor. Or the lost sheep. Everyone counts, even those students who don't quite fit in. So make sure your teaching fits the New Testament paradigm of love, for on this hang all the facts and figures. Always teach in love. It's a totally transforming paradigm. And ultimately, how much compassion we have, our ability to share compassion, to feel compassion, depends on how much compassion we feel God has for us. Moving on to how do others teach with compassion. Perhaps you've heard the quote, "People do not care how much you know until they know how much you care." So we're setting the groundwork here on day one, feeling compassion for your students so they will want to learn from you. Rita Pearson, a teacher for 40 years, once heard a colleague say, "They don't pay me to like the kids." Her response? Kids don't learn from people they don't like. So I'd like to share three stories here of how others have taught with compassion. First of all, a compassionate teacher and the disciple who was a thief. A long time ago, there was a Buddhist teacher who was wise and compassionate. He had many bright students. He taught them meditation and other practices, and they held him in high respect. But there was one in the monastery they couldn't tolerate. He was a young disciple who would often steal from his brother monks. He would steal their money and other things. So they complained about him to their teacher. "Master, he steals things from us." And then the human tendency, "Please advise him." So the wise one said, "Give him some time and he will learn. I'll talk to him." So the wise one called the young disciple after everyone had left and said, "Only right practice will give you what you crave for. Stop stealing things." The young monk prostrated before the wise one in respect and left, and he was ashamed of his habit, and he tried to stop. But it was difficult for him to change his mental pattern. Isn't it difficult for all of us? A few days passed without trouble, but he could not resist the temptation for long. Unfortunately, he was caught again. So the monks paraded him to the wise one and said, who dismissed them, saying, give him some time and he will learn. They caught him a few more times and brought him in front of the wise one for justice. And each time he would simply dismiss them and say, don't mind him, do your practices, he will learn to behave. They couldn't understand why he wouldn't send him out of the monastery. It happened again. So finally, they drug him in and said, Master, we can't take it anymore. You can keep us here or this thief. We will not stay if he stays. All right, you may leave then, came the reply. The monks were all surprised at the answer. You are all good disciples, and you will get admission into any monastery. But he won't be accepted anywhere else. I'm not going to leave him, said the compassionate one. So the young monk was watching all this commotion, and he was touched by the compassion of the great one. And his resolve was so strong that he gave up stealing thereafter for good. Another story, Mr. Bachman, my woodshop teacher, was the most influential teacher I ever had. I had gotten into trouble in his class. Another student had pushed me into a wood lathe, and I became enraged and began to hit him. Mr. Bachman stopped the fight, but instead of sending me to the office, he sat me down and asked me a simple question. Penna, why are you wasting your life? Why aren't you going to college? Well, I didn't know anything about colleges or scholarships. No one in my poor neighborhood considered that a fatherless boy had a future. That day, instead of rushing off for lunch, he stayed and explained possible education options to me. At the end of our talk, he sent me to a secretary. And 53 years have passed. And what have I done? Well, I've gained a PhD, taught English, social studies, moved from teacher to principal, and sat on an organization at the United Nations, etc. So in summary, this person became successful because it was without question only his confidence in me that propelled me forward. If I have been a successful educator, it is because I have had a great role model in Mr. Bachman. And that was from Robert Penna, New Jersey. And finally, a broken sculpture. It happened at my new school in fifth grade. We were learning sculpture, and I had decided to sculpt one of our cats. As it shaped up, I was very proud of the product, and it turned out just as I hoped. At the end of class, a classmate appeared with a cardboard box to gather up all the sculptures for storage, but as she dropped my sculpture into the box, it toppled. I watched in horror as my beloved sculpture broke. All that work gone. I had to fix it. I grabbed it and began frantic reconstruction. My classmate was annoyed. She had a job to do too and didn't want to get into trouble. We argued. I insisted I needed to fix it immediately. By our next class, it would be dried and ruined. She insisted I let it go. A tussle ensued. Reaching my breaking point, I slammed my hand down the table and screamed, "No!" startling the girl. My memories do not begin again until the moment I began to calm down. I was sitting in a chair with my back against the wall. My vision was focused on a single tile on the opposite wall, and I heard a single repetitive sound. Crack, crack, crack. It was the sound my skull made as I compulsively whacked it against the wall. I didn't know why I was doing it, except that each burst of pain seemed to somehow diminish the overwhelming tension that had me wrapped up so tight I felt like a spring about to snap. Gradually, I became aware of a voice, my teacher's voice. Slowly, it began to make sense. It's okay, Lynn. It's okay. As the crisis subsided, I became more lucid. When she was sure she had my attention, she calmly addressed my original worries. Then when she thought I was ready, she asked me if I was ready to return to class. When I stood to go, I was startled to realize my teacher and I were alone in the classroom. The rest of the kids were clustered by the door, staring. I felt a wave of shame and embarrassment roll over me. "I'm sorry," I said. But then my teacher's arm tightened around me in a comforting squeeze, and I knew in that moment I couldn't give up. And with a new strength, I walked toward the group of children with my head held high, determined to face whatever lay ahead. I have always remembered that moment and often wonder what would have happened if she had handled it differently. So, how can I teach with compassion? First of all, bring your whole person to the class. Compassionate teachers do not act as if they have left part of themselves at home. Great teachers have emotional lives. They share personally. They are human. Teachers who check their emotions at the door will be dismissed by their students as phonies. Don't assume professional means unemotional. Be alive and positive and remarkable improvements you see in your students. Smile. I read a story about a teacher who ended up in the principal's office. The principal could tell that she was just done. The principal said, "No, you're not done. You're going to have fun with these students. Tell me something about yourself. What do you enjoy?" And the teacher said, "Well, she enjoyed sewing and she enjoys beekeeping." Well, the principal said, "Figure out a way to bring those into your class." So the teacher got sewing machines and taught her students sewing and incorporated beekeeping in her class. And today, that teacher is not just still there, she's an integral part of the team in that school. Bring your whole person. Bring yourself. Know who your students are. Obviously their names, but also their interests and their strengths and their weaknesses. If you don't seek to know them, you will only learn to know the problem cases and the overachievers. The average student will believe their student, their teacher, has little concern for them, and their work will likely reflect that belief. Put yourself in your student's place. Acknowledge their struggles. Don't have a superior attitude or be dismissive of their difficulties. A lot of us as teachers, you know, are teachers because school was good to us. Many of us didn't struggle in school, so we might have to work harder to put ourselves in our students' shoes. Show your understanding for why they're getting confused. And being compassionate doesn't mean that we say, "It's okay, I'll let it go." You can still point out where they were wrong, but we don't criticize them as a person or make them feel belittled in intellect or character, but we point out how they should rightly behave and reprove wrong behavior. Reprove confidentially. To be praised in the presence of peers is a rich reward, but to be rebuked in public often adds humiliation to reprimand. Do your utmost to reprove students in private, even if it's over by your desk or out in the hall or something. I don't mean behind closed doors necessarily, but don't have a personal confrontation with them in the front of the class. Avoid favoritism. Your compassion must apply to all students, or it isn't compassion. There will always be some students who require more attention, and that's okay. Compassion isn't measured by equal time. It's measured by your heart and by whether the students feel neglected or excluded. And show interest in your students' future. Let them know there's a reason to persevere. Let them see you go to bat for them. You wouldn't want to teach to an empty classroom. Make comments and ask questions about their future. Show that you care for them and that you're educating them for the kingdom. Let them hear you say it. You aren't just here to get them through your room. You're here to prepare them for life. So, in conclusion, remember, education is never neutral. And if you ever doubted the need for compassion in education, remember the Holocaust. How could graduates of top universities organize a mass killing operation? And I'd like to finish with a story. May 20th, 2013, as an atomic bomb-force tornado hit Plaza Towers Elementary School in Moore, Oklahoma, about 3 p.m., teachers scrambled to protect their charges. They herded kids into the bathrooms in the building's interior, where sixth grade teacher Rhonda Crossway ran into a stall and lay down on top of six of her students, two under her arms, two under her torso, and two under her feet to shield them. One kid was crying, "I don't want to die." And she yelled, "We're going to be fine." A cinder block landed on her back, and glass was embedded in her skin. But Rhonda and the students were able to walk away from the ruins of the school, although seven other students died at Plaza Towers that day. Afterward, the teacher and her colleagues were called heroes, a label Rhonda rejected, saying, "Every morning at 9, those children become my children. I was just taking care of my kids. Go, take care of your students."
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.